Black architects are rare. Successful ones, rarer. By different accounts, of the 100,000 licensed architects in America, at most, 2% are black. In the 20th century, one Minnesotan became a beacon. When you picture the Winter Carnival ice palaces of the mid-20th century, or Highland Park's Water Tower in St. Paul, there you'll see Clarence Cap Wigington's work, his legacy, and his reputation. He was America's first black municipal architect. Some records refer to him as a city architect, but historian David Taylor, former dean of the University of Minnesota's General College, corrects that. He literally wrote the book on Wigington.
He was not the city architect, but merely the person who was in charge of the architectural office in terms of the productivity. He was a senior architectural designer for the city.
When you think of indelible architecture, daring and flamboyant designs often come to mind. Those of Frank Lloyd Wright, Frank Gehry, I.M. Pei, or other 20th century icons. As Professor Taylor explains, that wasn't Wigington's way.
The times didn't call for flamboyancy in public buildings. His job was not to create glitter, but to create things that were functional and lasting. Even in the homes that he designed, several of which are in the Highland Park area, some of them were rather large, but they wouldn't win a beauty contest, in my estimation.
According to a 2005 issue of Ebony Magazine, labor statistics estimated that there were about 100,000 architects licensed in the U.S., and according to a directory of black architects, of those, roughly 1,500 were African Americans. Curtis Moody, a Columbus, Ohio architect, noticed that lack of diversity means that it's that much harder for black architects to get the top commissions that can establish high-profile reputations and careers. Wigington died in 1961. It's reasonable to figure that situation then was worse. And so Professor Taylor described the most common color in Cap's work environment.
For his work life was surrounded by whites, whereas his social life might have been a mixture or two, and he himself was a person of mixed racial background. You know, there is probably some sensitivity and some access afforded him because of who he was. So he chose to use his position as a means of finding employment opportunities for talented people in the black community.
Now, you keep hearing the nickname Cap. Maybe you ask yourself how a man goes from having the name Clarence to that. Just after America entered World War I, Wigington petitioned Minnesota's governor to form a black battalion of the Minnesota Home Guard. The governor saw that he could promote racial equity without paying a huge political price, so the battalion was created, and as its captain, Clarence became Cap. As effective and reliable as he was while he worked for the city during a period of 30 years, that work wasn't consistent.
So his relationship with that office was longstanding over a period of, you know, maybe 30 or some odd years, not consistent, but they kept bringing him back because of the value of the work that he provided.
Mr. Wigington designed too many buildings to appreciate outside of a documentary, as Professor Taylor describes.
There's about 26 dwellings throughout the St. Paul surrounding areas, all that are kind of unique. I should mention the playground building at the Hamlin Recreational Park, very unique design, as well as the Harriet Island Pavilion. All of them are unique and different. Probably his most iconic building, of course, is the Highland Park Water Tower. That speaks for itself.
This is Will Wright for KFAI.
10,000 fresh voices on KFAI is made possible by listeners like you and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.